I'm Norm Shealy. You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight. This is Eva Herr, and thanks for listening. Tonight we're going to talk about organic gardening and organic pest control, and we have a great guest tonight that knows about everything under the sun there is to know about this. Thanks for coming on, Andy Lopez. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Fine, thanks. So
where is the show from?
It's out of California, but I'm in Atlanta.
Oh, cool.
So before we get started, why don't you take a few minutes to tell people who you are, how you got where you are, and where to find you.
Well, Andy Lopez, I'm better known as the Invisible Gardener. I got the name in 1971. I went to school during the day and did gardening at night. So I did instant vegetable gardens. I did raised beds for people and planted them, and you know, they wake up in the morning, the whole garden's there. So I got the name Invisible
That's
Gardener.
Great idea.
Yeah, and I've been doing it ever since. You know, Invisible Gardener is nature. You know.
Mm-hmm. So, you tell us about your book. You have a book, a fabulous book, by the way, Natural Pest Control. I love it. It's great for dogs like me.
That's the evolution of several books. I constantly write a book, and then they evolved. It used to be called How to Heal the Earth in Your Spare Time, and then it evolved into a natural pest control book. And it has, you know, it keeps evolving. I have different books I write all the time, but a natural pest control book is really the book that people go after, because the first chapter is called Dances with Ants, and everybody has an ant problem.
Well, I'll tell you. And you're at InvisibleGardener.com. Is that where they can find it?
Right. That's one of the websites. I have another one called organicdatabank.info. It's a new project of mine. I've been working on it for the last year and a half or so.
Well, I'll tell you what made me hunt somebody like you down, and I'm so glad to find you because you seem to be fabulous. I had tomatoes last year that had big black spots on the bottom of them, and nothing I did fixed it. And I said, if I'm having it, other dummies have to have it too. So
that's right.
I want to, assuming that we can't get our soil tested, what are some visible symptoms of tomatoes, squash, beans, corn, and what do those symptoms mean that we need to do?
Well, first I want to address your real problem, you know, so that, because there's a law of cause and effect, and if you get stuck in the effect, you'll never solve the causes, okay? Symptoms are just the effects, not the causes. In your case, for example, I tell people, look, you know, it makes a big difference the varieties of tomatoes. You know what heirloom tomatoes are?
Well, I know that it says that on the package.
Right. Well, heirloom tomatoes means that they've been grown organically for centuries. In England, other parts of the world, they've always been grown organic, and these seeds have never had chemicals touched to them. They were grown, you know, generation after generation, and those are totally organic, and nothing you've ever seen before. There are literally thousands of varieties. For tomatoes, for example, there are hundreds and hundreds of varieties of tomatoes. Okay? So the variety makes a big difference. And
I have
a lot
question
of these.
Here. If it says heirloom, so that means it's not a GMO, right? We can trust
exactly
that.
Exactly, right. Exactly. Okay. I don't want to get off the subject, but GMO, you know, is affecting the organic. It's because, you know, so if you've been growing up to, say, heirloom tomatoes for in your farm, and all of a sudden you're starting to find that that GMO is appearing in your farm, they're going to shut you down. So it does affect you to a certain extent. It is a danger. But the variety of tomatoes you grow makes a difference. A lot of these tomatoes are totally immune to the diseases. You go to the store, nursery, you buy tomatoes, and you plant them, they're going to get one disease or another, because they're chemically grown. Their genetics are made so that you have to spray them, otherwise they're going to get it. And then try to do it organically.
How do we know if organic, I mean, if GMOs get in with our natural seeds? How do we know?
Well, first of all, the people who are growing it, they test it all. If they have the money, they test it, because you can test it for that. I say that money-wise because a lot of people who grow their vegetables over and over again for centuries don't have the kind of money to send their products off More and more of the GMO stuff is appearing around the world because it does travel that way. You can't really stop it. What really happens is that the folks who did the GMO really go after you and say you have it, and therefore you have to pay us a fee. That's one way they know. And they do test it. If it's certified organic, that's what certification is. You have to go through this testing process, including GMO.
You can't
GMO
tell by
product.
Looking at it.
No, unfortunately, you can't tell by looking at it or taste or anything like that. Only way you can tell is if you happen to get the disease that comes with it.
Oh, okay.
There is a disease that's named after that, you know.
No, I don't know. Tell me,
talking
what
about
is this?
Some other time. Well, I don't know the name of it. I've had there's a lady called Charlotte Gerson from the Gerson Institute. She used to do, I let her do a radio show for a year or so, and she talked about one day about there finally is a disease that comes from eating genetic engineered food.
Oh, I know it about the people, but what about, do the plants get specific diseases?
Well, the plants themselves are become more susceptible to diseases, and you definitely have to use more of the chemicals that you originally the idea was to be able to make them so that the bugs wouldn't attack them, so that you didn't have to use pesticides. But then they incorporated, now you can, they made it so that you can use more pesticides. That's what GMO really is all about, is incorporating pesticides into the products, and then you can spray, weed control, and it won't kill the product.
Oh, okay. So
see?
Back to the tomatoes. If we have that black spot on the bottom, what is that?
Right. So it's really all these diseases are soil-borne diseases, okay? That means they start in the soil and work to the plant. And there has to be a combination of a couple of things happening. So I tell people, if you don't want to get too complicated and try to name the disease, I'm an Aquarius. I don't care the name of the disease. I just want to be able to cure it,
yeah.
Solve the problem. Other people say, well, I got to know the name of the disease. There are many different types of diseases. There are literally hundreds of diseases that can be, from anthracnose to different types of blights to different types of fungus. There are tons of different ones. The particular one is called black spot, believe it or not, because it does do that. Basically, it goes down to a trace mineral deficiency, which goes back to the soil, because there's bacteria in the soil that basically, they are the ones that eat the food that the plant eats the food then. See?
Okay. So
right?
I went to Home Depot and I said to the man there, I got black spots in my tomatoes, and he said, oh, you need calcium. So is it a calcium
right.
deficiency, or is it?
Exactly right. Calcium is a trace mineral deficiency, right. So
okay.
What that means to me is that little bacteria is supposed to eat the minerals and provide the calcium is not there. It also tells me that your pH of your soil is a little too high or too low, because everything has to be within a certain range of pH. Now, one of the things I've learned a long time ago, because plants need calcium more than they need nitrogen, right? If you can believe that. And in the sixth grade, when I started doing services for people, guess what I sprayed? Especially that one year where I was the first person to do edible landscaping in my junior high school, and I did tomatoes. And of course, at that time, I didn't know you were supposed to buy organically grown tomatoes. I started them from seed. And they all, a lot of them started, with the sprinklers coming on, they started getting all the diseases, and I sprayed them with coffee, cream, and sugar.
Really?
And the cream is what? Calcium. See? Because I know I grew up in Cuba and Puerto Rico, and my mother is a organic gardener. She was always out there spraying things with milk.
Regular gallon milk that you buy at the store?
A cup of milk, gallon of water. Coffee, cream, and sugar. You want coffee because coffee is acidic.
Okay.
You want, the plants absorb things under an acidic environment. That's what the pH comes in. If your pH is over 7, 7 is neutral, but 8, 7, 5, 7, 6 become very alkaline, and the minerals are not available. And that's why you want something acidic, because the plants can, 6.5, for example, is a nice range of 6. Coffee's 5. So if you spray your plants in an environment and their pH is 8, it'll bring the pH down a little bit, and also makes the calcium available. And sugar, what do plants do with sugar? Photosynthesis. So it basically raises their energy level. I talk about energy a lot. You know what Brix level is? It's the level of sugar in the plant. The higher the sugar level, the more minerals it has, see? There's a little device called a refractometer. It's invented by a cook. You know when you go shopping, you kind of want to taste it. or do whatever things to it. I know a lady does a little radionics to it just to see if it's the right food. Well, this is called a refractometer. You put a little bit of the food on the device, you look into it, it tells you the Brix level. The higher the Brix level, the sweeter it is. And farmers started using that a long time ago. They test their corn with it. And you can, you know, diseases will not attack a plant if the Brix level are up beyond a certain point. See?
What's a Brix level?
It's a level of sugar in plants. It's called Brix, B-R-I-X or B-R-I-C, which, depending upon it.
Do you spray this on the leaves or do you put it in the soil?
You spray it on the leaves. Coffee cream and sugar goes spray it on the leaves, and usually the way you do it is you make a second batch. You drink coffee, make another batch for the plants, add a little bit of sugar, a dash of, you know, usually 1 to 10 is a cream ratio, so if you have a gallon, you want to put in, say, a cup, you know, of sugar, a cream, you know, and a cream doesn't have to be whole milk or live milk. Any kind of cream will do, right?
Interesting.
And the milk will control the disease and provide the calcium, and at the same time give it a sugar boost, because that's what the plants need, is a little energy to control the disease. But you also have to control what the real problem, which is the disease is in the soil. See?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the real way to control that is you learn how to use compost, learn how to use rock dust, and learn how to use mulch. It's supposed to be compost, rock dust, and mulch. See?
Now, that's another question I have coming for you. Rock dust, you talk about that a lot in your book. What is that, and where do we get it? Can we get it? For those of us that can't go to a rock quarry, where do we get it?
Well, they have the Internet now. You know, you can type in it, rock dust. Like on my website, there's a source of rock dust from all different parts of the United States and the world. You know, try to find something nearby, because it's heavy. 50 pounds could cost you a little bit. I get stuff here locally in Southern California. I don't have to ship it up. But different rock dusts are different in value. Basically, it's mined rocks that's mined into a very fine powder, 200 mesh, and it's a way of minerals. It's called remineralization. There's a group called remineralization. It's called remineralization.org, and they talk about John Haymaker, and Don Weaver is a friend of mine. He'll get mad if I don't mention his name. They talk about remineralization all the time. You ever read the book called Secrets of the Soil?
No.
You would love it. Remineralization, it's very important, the minerals. That's why we eat stuff. The reason why we eat is to get the minerals in our bodies, which is not very good at eating rocks.
Yeah.
So we have to eat something else, who ate something else, that eats something else, so we can get that. That's the whole purpose of everything. And all diseases and everything all goes back to a trace mineral deficiency, whether it be in human or in plants.
Can we get these things at a place like Home Depot?
Home Depot won't even know what you're talking about. Excuse me. So the ideal scenario is to first go to a nursery, talk to the person there, see, because you know they can't buy it. I was in a store the other day and I saw rock dust and earthworm castings, and this was a regular nursery. So it is available. There's more and more available, and the way you get it is by asking the store manager, can you get some for me? You know, but either that, you can also talk to a local garden. You know, that's why I tell people join a local gardening club, because somebody there is bound to know about rock dust. You know, even me. If you go on my website, you can see what's in your neighborhood and try to get it. They're all different types of rock dust. Nothing's the same. You know, they're all different. I get a blend of rock dust because some are high in calcium, some are higher in iron. You see, and that's what you want. You want a blend. So that you can then provide, because the idea is you feed the soil, not the plants. You can give rock dust to your plants all you want to. They won't absorb it. They have to go into the soil. The bacteria has to eat the rock dust. The poop of the bacteria is what the plants eat.
Okay.
See?
So what do we do in the fall, you know, after our gardens are done for the summer and we want to feed our soil a little bit, what do we put out there? Rock dust, what about Epsom salts? What about peroxide? Do you put those kind of things while the plants are in the ground, or can you nurture it in the fall before you put the plants that spring?
Well, see, the ideal scenario is to learn to make compost, and in the process of making compost, that's when you're adding all these things to it. You add rock dust to it, you add animal manure to it, you add something green, something brown. That's the idea of compost, is to get it to cook for you, to get together all the bacteria and everything, and then when that's ready, then that goes on into the ground. You see, that's the whole process. That's the whole reason why you make compost, is because you know you got to get the bacteria and the minerals together in the right place. For example, if you take rock dust and you add it to any type of animal manure, all the minerals stay there instead of leaching out and disappearing. So that's why you make compost. That's the best thing you can do is make it and use it in your garden. And the more, and you can't be an organic gardener if you don't use compost. If the guy says, I'm an organic gardener, and you ask him about compost, and if he says, I don't do use compost, then I would be very leery as to what he would be using, see?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't want to get too off on this question I'm going to ask you right now because I know it's too long, but I heard something the other day about some pending legislation that if you have a garden in your yard and you'll get you'll have to pay $500 and you can't do compost and you'll have to do store-bought fertilizers. Do you know anything about that?
Well, that was just there was a couple of legislations that was supposed to have gone through that didn't happen, that they wanted to regulate. Basically the bottom line is they wanted to regulate organics, and they were using it as a ploy. They were saying, well, we have to control bioterrorism, we have to control toxins, and this is how we're going to do it. It then never got onto the floor. There's no way it happened in terms of controlling people from making compost. Every city has their own ordinances about making compost. Some of them are like 20 years in the past. You know, they need to be upgraded. Upgraded. The same thing with gray water. I'm not really worried about people not using compost. I think what's happening is that the power that be, that means that the chemical companies do not really want, you know, laws regulating them. Okay?
Right.
That's what it comes down to, see?
So it didn't pass. We can stop worrying about that.
No, it never got onto the floor. There's a whole bunch of discussions and stuff up on the website out of it, which links you to all the different. I work with a lot of organizations that keep me in touch. You'd be surprised how fast, you know, like one person says one thing and another person, before you know it, it's the end of the world, it's the end of the world, you know.
Okay, I have a few questions here. What does blood meal do? What does bone meal do? What does potassium, magnesium, calcium, and zinc, what do those things do, and how do we know which one we need? What symptoms will we see on our plants if we need one of those things?
Well, all those things are have a food value in the organic business. You know, it depends upon, you know, to an organic gardener, you know, blood meal to me, for example, is a very high source of nitrogen, but it also has specific bacteria that come with it. So I learned how to use that. I don't use it as much nowadays as I did when I was younger. Only same thing with bone meal, only because I'm very leery of the mad cow disease and the way that they make these products. If it's certified, see a lot of certified organic stuff that comes from other parts of the world. Other world, I'm very leery about. They could make up their own rules, so I stopped using that because they could. And I read somewhere where that's one of the things they do. When the animals get sick, they make it for blood meal and bone meal, figuring it's okay. And the reality of it, it isn't. And so, but in the old days, you know, you had a farm, you had cattle, you know, you had blood and bone and meal. Those are natural things that can be used in the organic garden. You know, you learn how to use them. Blood meal is a high source of nitrogen, but it also has all the different minerals, a variety of minerals, because the animals absorb the minerals too, you know. So that's one way to get the minerals back. Like it's the same thing with bone meal. It's high in calcium, and it's a way to put the minerals back. But as I grew and evolved, I learned to use rock dust, which supplies all the minerals, and I don't, except for the nitrogen. And then you can get the lots of different sources of nitrogen that you can get. I learned to use, you know, animal manures. I was using sheep manure, llama manure, rabbit manure, you know, chicken. You know, you learn all those are great sources of nitrogen. And then there's, you know, lots of other different sources of nitrogen. You don't have to be into, you know, I'm a vegetarian to some degree, but I don't like torturing animals, killing them for any reason. So I tend to use other things that are more less harm, you know. I don't have to kill anything. Again, it goes back to rock dust. I can get lots of different sources. So the main thing a person has to figure out is you want to have fun. You don't want to get too involved in things, but you do want to be able to give things a good diet, basically a blend. That's where organics is very good, because all organic fertilizers on the market now they're a blend. So you don't have to worry about trying to get other things into it. As long as you learn how to make compost, you learn about mulch, you learn how to control water, and find a good source, a good organic fertilizer, at certified organic fertilizer, there usually has a complete blend of food. You don't have to worry about being deficient in any one particular, you know, mineral or another. Whereas chemically, you kind of know. You kind of need to know, because if you look at chemical fertilizer, it only has three or four numbers on it. I call it the numbers game. The rest of the minerals, you're going to have to figure out where to get from, right?
Yeah, I learned something last year about nitrogen. I thought I was doing a good job feeding my soil, because I knew it needed minerals. So I went out and I bought a bunch of stuff and I got something very high in nitrogen, and my plants grew over my head. Beautiful green plants, but they had no fruit on them.
Right. So what happens is that high nitrogen produces rapid growth. Great for bugs. You're lucky you didn't get attacked by a lot of bugs, you know, but it does discourage blooming. So you learn how to feed different. I make my own fertilizers. I started in the very beginning because you can't buy anything. You make your own stuff. And so, like, for orchids, you want to learn there's a certain time of, like, in tomatoes. You know, if you keep feeding them high nitrogen, they look at giant tomato plants. No tomatoes.
That's exactly what I had. They were, like, 7 feet tall. I didn't have any tomatoes.
No tomatoes. Right. So
beautiful green. They look like a, you know.
Right.
Oh, beautiful.
That's the ideal time to switch over to the coffee, cream, and sugar, because that would encourage the blooming, see?
Okay. And what does potassium specific? I mean, like, I gave the nitrogen, I got all green plants. If I give too much potassium, what will I get?
Well, what happens is that you'll get potassium as part of the fruit, and that will help it to flower. Okay, that will encourage flowering, but it also at the same time encourages deep root system and encourages the plant not to grow so big, but to get not to grow so tall, but to get bigger. If you have fruit on it, it'll make the fruit bigger. It's great. That's why it's great for melons, things that big fruit that you want to eat. It's also good for strawberries because it makes the strawberries bigger.
Yeah, that's another thing. I had strawberry bed that I've had for 5 or 6 years, but I have two problems. I have beautiful green plants, no strawberries, and lots of snails and slugs.
Okay, well, it depends on the varieties. Lots of different varieties that do really well. You may, you know, some varieties, if you bought them in a store, are just not as good genetically. One of the things for snails is coffee grinds. Put a coffee grind in the ground. More likely what's happening is that your pH is a little too high. You're giving it too much of a high nitrogen food, which is not encouraging to produce, you know, the bloom which needs it for the fruit. And at the same time, the fact that you can use the coffee grinds in the ground, which will control the snails and lower your pH down, which will allow more food to be available. But you may want to switch your whatever fertilizer you're using. Are you using a chemical fertilizer or an organic fertilizer?
I use something from Home
you can
Depot.
Tell me.
Not this year, but last year I used something from Home Depot that said organic. That's about 50% of it.
Right, all right.
I guess I'm really interested in people like me who we work all the time. We don't have a lot of time to be out there, and we can't go driving all over the world looking for anything. I don't have a compost, so God, I wish I did, but I don't. So what, you know, how can you direct people like me to have a better garden, city people, you know, to have a little bit better garden?
Well, that's in essence what I do. I started a club a long time ago because people kept asking me all the time. See, they learn. You learn real fast. Hey, this guy knows what he's doing. I mean, just talk to him a little bit, and it makes it easier for me. See, I tell people, join a garden club, but, you know, if you're busy, you just want to be able to do what you need to do without spending all the time and energy and make things happen. And that's where it comes in handy to at least be able to talk to somebody and say, okay, The fertilization aspect is really easy. You just have to make sure you get a hold of a good, balanced organic fertilizer. You know, a lot of fertilizers on the market, they say they're organic, but only a small part of it is organic. You know what I mean? And then the rest of it is pure chemical. And so you just have to find somebody you can trust, and then just, you know, take all the energy, everything he or she tells you, and go through that. Eventually you'll figure it out because, you know, you need to. You need to be able to learn how to take care of your house plans and do the few things that you need to do to be happy. And that's all you really need. You know, other people need more. I mean, I need a garden, but other people can survive in New York City on the roof, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody's different reaching, you know, whatever it is that they make them happy, that they can live their life in peace, and, you know.
If we, today I actually went out and put some Epsom salts on it. What will that do for my plants?
You don't really want to get into habit of adding Epsom salt, magnesium to plants. It upsets the balance of the soil. Yes, it gives us some magnesium, because magnesium is one of the trace minerals that you need. It's called trace minerals for a reason. You do that a few times, you no longer have trace minerals, you have maximum minerals, which is toxic. and
the
plants will wither.
What should I do now if I've got too much?
No, if you did it, how often have you been doing it?
This is the second time this year.
No problem, that's fine. Most people do it every month, no good. Twice a year, that's fine. The ideal way is to add it to water and pour it, by the way.
Okay. I just poured it on my dirt, but then I immediately watered it, so it's going to be okay.
Right. What I do is, instead of the coffee, cream, and sugar, you would do the coffee, cream, and Epsom salt. See?
Okay. And what does that do? What does magnesium do for your plants?
Magnesium are one of the trace minerals that the plants need. You know, the plants basically, just like humans, they need certain trace minerals in order for them to do certain functions in their little bodies, okay? And magnesium is very important for plants in the process of photosynthesis. You know about photosynthesis?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right, so, and that helps them to take the sunlight and turn it into sugar.
Okay.
See? Too much of it changes the balance of the soil and it becomes toxic. Too much of any of the trace minerals. That's why it's called trace minerals. There are 78 trace minerals. If you do it, you know about arsenic and lead and mercury, mm-hmm. and all those things. Well, those, you know, you don't need a whole lot of those to be toxic. But the same thing with magnesium, plants will get deformed, or fruit will get deformed.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So the coffee grounds that you talk about, do they have to be brewed, or can you just pour some coffee out there?
You're about the 100th person that's asked me that. And I said, look, if you want to control snails, the stronger the caffeine, the better, right? Because that's what controls the snails. So, yeah, if you got a snail problem and you don't mind going out and buying a can of coffee grind, you know, coffee without, then just take it and use it straight, and you'll find it's very strong. But usually I tell people, look, you know, enjoy the coffee, take the grind after you have the coffee, and you make it, and then, you know, use that. As a matter of fact, don't even use the grind. Make another liquid batch, then use the grind, and you got the liquid too.
Okay.
See?
All right. What will we see in a plant if it doesn't have enough calcium and enough zinc?
Well, calcium, unlike... Remember, it's like bones. Remember, you need calcium for bones. That's what mm-hmm. plants need the calcium for. It helps to make the little blood flow through the plant and encourages little cell walls to build. So what happens is the plant will become stressed out, and it'll start getting all kinds. It'll get smaller. The fruit will be smaller. It won't blossom as well. But more importantly, every bug in the neighborhood will know about it, and it will be attacked by tomato hornworm, by one type of disease or another. Because
okay. I'm sorry.
Sugar levels.
Okay. Another problem that I see a lot is greens with butterfly holes eating all in them. The Home Depot guy said, oh, use this flaxseed oil, and I did, but it didn't do a thing.
Well, again, it goes down to, you know, the varieties of vegetables that you're growing. It usually means that there's just, you know, they were chemically grown. The seeds were that in order for them to do well, they needed to have the shot of nitrogen or the MG. You know what that is? Is a fertilizer on the market that feeds them really heavily. Basically, there are little different types of caterpillars that's what they do. If you had looked, caught it at the right time, flipped it underneath, you would have seen it's a tiny little green caterpillar that came and ate the plant. And that's how they know what to eat, because the sugar level drops on the lettuce. And so it just really comes down to is if you're going to be growing greens and stuff like that, you may want.
Hello?
Coffee, cream, and sugar is very good right from the very start, because it keeps your energy up. But learn the variety. Some varieties would do better than a lot of these chemically grown varieties, because they're very weak.
What can I put on it to make the bugs stay off?
When I did my garden, I went through a variety of different things. You learn to use soap, any type of natural soap, any type of natural Castile soap works really, really good. I learned that when I was doing the vegetables, I had to stop doing the soap because I tend to eat right away, and I didn't wash. So I switched over to something that I, it allows me to eat them, so I would spray them with Louisiana Tabasco sauce, a little bit of Louisiana Tabasco sauce in water, and spray your plants with it. They love that. Garlic, so there's a different garlic products on the market called Garlic Barrier, you know, that meant to keep mosquitoes away, but it keeps all kinds of other bugs away, too. You can make your own garlic mixture and spray it on the plants. I also learned to spray a variety of different oils. I use sesame oil, not straight. So you take a little bit of sesame oil, add it to water, shake it up, and spray.
Okay.
Then I used to, I did Mongolian fire oil, chili oil. You can go through the varieties of the oils that you like, and you can spray your plants, shake it, add it to water, spray it, and then do it in the afternoon because that's when they come out.
How much? You just use like a tablespoon or so for a gallon, or what? How do you
well,
limit?
Well, again, the strength. I always tell people use the smallest amount that works. You know, the law a little bit. Usually, one tablespoon in a quart is very strong.
Okay.
A quart of water.
Okay.
But if you're going to be using that, might as well just make a batch of coffee. Did you know that if you get coffee right and you get it really nice and hot, put it in a sprayer, run out there and spray your plants. You'll do the same thing. You won't hurt the plants, but it will kill any of the caterpillars, any bugs on them, because it's just hot enough.
Wonderful information, Andy.
You can spray your hand, it won't burn it, right? You know, if it's really hot. You ever done that? Put hot boiling water in a sprayer and then mist your hand with it. You don't burn it, but you feel the heat.
Mm-hmm. Right. I haven't.
Try that, you'll see, and that's what happens to the bugs.
Today, I actually went out and bought Castile. I read your book, and I went out and bought these things that you recommend in your book. So I'm going to
okay.
Next question. How do you make sure your... Well, let me back up. Raised beds, hanging baskets, what do we do?
For raised beds, it's I tell people, if you can't go down, go up. Raised beds is basically where you build a structure in the ground going up and fill it with soil. That's a raised bed. Well, the ideal raised bed, you want to go down 2 or 3 feet and up 2 or 3 feet.
Okay,
that's the ideal raise, 2 or 3 feet. It depends. 2 feet is more than high enough for a raised bed, 18 inches, 16 inches. It depends on how high you want to go up. 3 feet is rather high, but I've done it for people who can't bend over. But basically, 12 inches, 16 inches to raised bed, that's a nice height for a bed.
Okay.
4 feet long, 4 feet wide, 10 feet long. You make them out of any number of things, from wood, but you control the soil there. You control the water. You can grow 4 to 7 times more in the same space than in the ground.
Oh, I need to back up for a minute. I want to ask one more question. White, powdery-looking stuff that gets on squash leaves. How the heck do you...
Right, that's a form of powdery mildew. Again, it's a calcium deficiency. It's really a soil problem. You learn to use an acid mulch. So I use azalea mix, which is a nice acid mulch.
Okay.
So when you do your soil, put a nice layer, you have your plants growing, put a nice layer of azalea mix. Anything acid will prevent the disease from spreading, and then learn immediately to spray it on a regular basis with the coffee cream and sugar,
okay.
And give it a good. You want to feed them, you learn if you don't feed them, the energy drops, and the rule of organic, you always feed on a regular basis, a little bit on a regular basis rather than a lot, less often.
Do you have to spray the top and the underside of all the leaves, or can you just get it on the plant?
No, top and bottom, especially if you want to control, if you're doing something for a disease, you're controlling a bug. A lot of people spray the top, and the bug's underneath the leaf going, you missed me. See, so you lift the leaf up, and you spray underneath. And the best time to spray at night, when they're working. That's how I got the name Invisible Gardener. I go at night, and under a full moon or whatever, they're out there. See, they're not going to be out there during the day. So you can spray it top and bottom, and then at night they come out. What good is that going to do, right?
Okay, another question. How do you make sure you water it right? Too much, too little, soak it? What do you do?
Yeah, watering is a big trick. It's a big problem for a lot of people. A lady contacted me the other day. She was like watering for 4 hours a week all at once with a drip system. And she said, what's wrong with my tree? It was soaking. It was just muddy. It was dying from lack of oxygen. But... So the ideal rule of thumb is you want to water on some type of regular basis, so usually twice a week, 3 times a week, depends where you live at. You know, if you're really high desert environment, or you're in a rainy environment. The rule of thumb is, if it's wet, don't water it, and you need to let it dry out in between watering.
Okay. Okay.
So stick your finger in, and if it's wet, well, I don't think it needs watering, and then try to keep the water below ground as much as possible rather than above. Use a drip system or a soaker system, which means everything stays below ground. And you waste 75% of your water by using sprinklers.
Okay. And now I want to talk a little bit about pest control. How do you get squirrels and chipmunks out of your attic?
Out of the attic?
Yes.
Out of the attic
is problem.
Well, it's real easy. You know, you actually there are a couple of ways. The easiest way would be to learn that they have a sense of smell 10 times stronger than you do. So you learn to use essential oils for starters. You know what essential oils are?
Yeah, I have a whole bunch of them, yeah.
Right, so pick something you like and don't overdo it. You know, don't add too much in the water. You know how it is if you spray too much citronella oil or pennyroyal oil or whatever. But you want to be able to spray the attic with that scent. And at the same time, make sure you do any repair, because if the screen is broken, however way they get in, you know, you want to fix that. But all you have to do is give it a good spray of lavender oil, cinnamon oil, pennyroyal, you name it, and do it, say once a week for a while, and that will effectively keep it from coming back.
Okay.
See?
Something interesting you talked about in your book was vitamin D3 for pest control. I was shocked about that.
Who?
Vitamin D3.
Vitamin D3?
Yeah, I was surprised about that. I didn't know that.
Right. And it's vitamin D actually can't be. It's a form of vitamin that can't be absorbed by lower mammals like rats and rodents and such.
So how do you buy that? I mean, I only know about it in little pills, you know, that you get at the health food store. How do you?
Right.
Buy
it? Well, it's funny because it was working so much, they took it off the market.
Mm.
So,
Didn't surprise me.
Yeah, it didn't surprise me a bit either, because you know it was very harmless. It didn't hurt dogs and cats. It's like where did it go? What happened? I have to update the book and say good luck if you can find. You can probably find it in third world countries. In America, we have this. You know, here if it works, we better figure out something. You can't.
Yeah, you got to get rid of it so pharmaceuticals
right.
can make money.
Works too well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay, I forgot to ask you about hydrogen peroxide and using that with plants. Do you spray it? Do you put it in the soil? Where do you put that?
You spray
That's
it.
How I got rid of my slugs, by the way.
Right, you can spray it on. You have to find the right mixture. You know, it doesn't hurt. You can't burn with it, but you just want to, you know, not waste it. Usually a couple of tablespoons and a quart of water will work. And it works on a variety of different creatures. It works because it controls the natural bacteria that they have with them. You ever see it, yeah, how it foams?
Yeah.
It'll foam on snails.
And they started squirming and stuff, and I kind of felt guilty.
Exactly right. It'll foam on. It'll make all kinds of creatures foam right up. But it's only something I would do if I actually had to, because I really think that they go through some kind of torture when you do
yeah.
that to them, you know.
I thought so too.
But it does control ants. It'll control all the kinds of creatures from coming around too, because it gets rid of their trails and such too.
Does the plant like it?
It's great for the plant. Provides them a variety of different minerals and that they need. What I did was, instead of using, because I used to feed my plants with it, now I feed them with, I have a product called Super Seaweed, which I invented, but I substituted willow water instead of hydrogen peroxide.
Interesting.
You know what willow water is, right?
Willard, I've heard of it, but I can't remember what it is.
Right, Dr. Willard invented this water. It's kind of like heavy water that's for humans. You take it, and it provides you bacteria and minerals, and it's supposed to cure you all kinds of things.
But as a kid,
I started spraying plants with it. Hey, is it good for people? It's good for plants, because I used to give it to my dog for the tummy ache, you know. And then one day, actually, they had too much of it, gave it some tomato plants, and the plants went nuts. And now I always use that as part of my plant food, because it provides iron and certain types of bacteria that plants need. So.
What about, how do you get rid of something like carpenter bees? My neighbor has that problem.
Well, the carpenter bees, you learn, there are a couple of different things you can do. First of all, you try to make them go away. I hate to kill them, you know, so learn to use the essential oils. They don't like that. They're very strong. They'll smell that. You can spray the areas that they're in, or what I tend to do is take a cotton ball, dip them in the oil, throw the oil in the container or wherever it is that they're in, you know, they will leave. Almond has a arsenic, which will kill someone in contact.
Wait, say that again. You cut out for
almond oil.
Uh-huh.
Almond. So if you use almond, a little bit of almond, a tablespoon and a quart. Everything's a tablespoon and a quart, okay? almond oil, or Dr. Broder's almond soap, or any of those natural almond soaps. Almond is a natural source of arsenic, and it's toxic to bees and all types of creatures like that.
That's very interesting. All right, Andy, we got about 13 minutes left. I'm going to let you talk about what you want to talk about.
Oh, what I want to talk about? Wow, there's a lot of things I want to talk about. You know, I do a radio show on a regular basis. It's called Don't Panic, It's Organic. I run a garden club. The website is called organicdatabank.info. I'm in the process. This month alone, in June, I wrote 10 e-books. I just finished writing the natural, the Vegetable Organic Grower's Guide. And I just finished writing one on natural flea control. I did another one on natural fertilizers. I'm constantly updating my e-book, which people come looking for me for. It's called Dances with Ants. That book, e-book, these are only $2, by the way, e-books. And, of course, my pest control book, the natural pest control book, it evolved into an e-book so people can just buy it and download it as an e-book rather than, you know, spending resources to print it and all this stuff. You can just download it on your computers, pictures, everything. And then I do movies all the time. I have videos up there on how to, you know, it's called Gardener Gone Wild. So I'm busy, and I invite people to come, listen to the radio show, join the club. Excuse me?
Where's your show at? Where are they found
it? If they go to organicdatabank.info, there's a radio button up there. Click on the radio. If it's a Saturday, that's when it's live. Otherwise, if you click on it, it takes them to the, you know, all the different shows that are up there. They can listen to it. They can sign up for an RSS feed. That way they can get it on their iPod. I also do they can also do the videos that they can download. But, you know, people join the club and they have access to everything is free available to the members, and they can have an Ask Andy department so people can talk to me, because that's the whole reason why I'm there. I tell people you're hiring an organic expert for life, because once they join, it's a lifetime membership. Believe it or not, I'll be here as long as I'm alive to help them to deal with it, because I've gone through it myself. Ants. Everybody's got ants, and you do not have to kill yourself, your pets, your children, your family, everything to get rid of the ants, because it's very easy. That's why we call it Dances with Ants. And then I do flea control and the cucaracha control, and, of course, we talk about rock dust, and I was the president of Rose Society for many years, so I just did a natural rose care book. It's pretty much an ongoing thing.
You had some really good information in your book about rodent control that we didn't get to go over, using tobacco or using your car and a hose. I thought that was
right. When I was in the sixth grade, I was asked to get rid of some gophers, and I didn't want to use, you know, the strychnine, and the poison, and the bombs you stick in there, and all these other things that you do. So I actually, you know, saw the TV where the guy killed himself when he had the exhaust system and he sat in the car. I said, well, if it works for humans, I figured out a way to hook it up to the car and run a hose into the ground, and that's what I did for many years. And then this one guy said he patented it, and it's a very little device, simple device. It goes in the back of your exhaust system. You hook the hose into it, and you run it into the ground, you know, where the gopher hole is. You run it for a little while. It's a very humane way. Puts them to sleep. You're not using anything more than you're normally driving, and doesn't promote, you know, the earth absorbs the carbon monoxide, you know, and it's a very safe, clean way to control not only gophers, but all kinds of underground, I call them underground pests. Very simple, and it's a lot better than using strychnine, which then animals and dogs and other creatures get at it, you know.
I thought that was amazing. I'd never heard that. And you also talked about using tobacco to get rid of pests or rodents. Can you talk about that for a second?
Well, I stopped doing that because I don't really, you know, it's irritating. You mainly you just buy some cigars and you cut them up and you let them chew it, you know. But maybe they end up in the habit of chewing tobacco, you know. But you know, as I said, as I evolve, I stopped using tobacco because when I was young, I got an Old Farmer's Almanac, and you know, 1892, and it says put some tobacco in water and spray. It's so cool. But then I got it through my skin, you know. My Oriental doctor said, "Oh, your liver's on fire. You can't do that." So I stopped spraying tobacco. I said, "Oh, I bury it. You take tobacco, chewing tobacco, put it in a sock, and you bury it under hibiscus, for example. Get rid of your whiteflies." I wouldn't bury it under fruit trees, right? You could bury it under roses. Caterpillars, creatures won't come after them. So don't bury them under something you want to eat. But you could, you know, it works great on trees. It controls all kinds. What I do is I make a mixture. See, I call it a TGM Plus. It's tobacco, garlic. M is some kind of manure, and plus it's a rock dust. So you make this poultice, and that goes, it's called tree vents, basically the clay drain pipes that you bury at the base of a tree, and you put that in there, and you put a drip system so it percolates down to the roots, and they're absorbed. The garlic is a systemic, so is tobacco. It gets absorbed right into the tree, and the bug comes in, this is not the tree I'm looking for, and leaves it alone. That's great for deer and diseases. I mean, the tobacco, if you put the manure in, that's the bacteria, see, and the rock dust is the minerals. You have the garlic, and the tobacco gets absorbed right into the tree.
That's very
It's a little bit ahead of time because people are not, they don't catch that. They don't, you know, I'm an arborist, but I'm probably the only one in the world that thinks that way because most of these arborists, you know, they you would think that they were taught about using, you know, organics, but they're mainly, the whole test is about, you know, I say 50% of the test at least. It's chemicals. You know, how to use them safely.
How do we keep fleas off our pets or kill them in our house?
Well, first of all, you have a stable environment outside. When you have fleas in your properties because something's out of balance, the natural predators of fleas and the conditions are not there. So you want to learn to use beneficial nematodes. That's what goes in the ground. That will control fleas, termites, all kinds of creatures. Nematodes.
What is that?
Little creatures that normally should be found in the soil, but when
Where
they die off
it?
In your soil, you buy them from lots of different places. You can type them in on the internet. On my website, there's links to it. It's called beneficial nematodes. It'll control subterranean termites. It'll control fleas, ants. Any creature, right, that lives in the soil gets controlled by these creatures. Here's the problem. Here's the key. If they die in the soil, it means your soil is toxic. City water has stuff in it that kills the soil. So you have to learn to add compost. You learn to bring your soil back to life. That's what soil is. You know, that's what you want, a living soil. If you have that and you have a balance, nematodes survive, controls the fleas. The other things you can use on the dog, there are lots of different natural soaps that can be used. I love the Dr. Broner soap, for example, or any natural Castile soap can be used for them, you know. I just wrote an article on the natural flea controls. I did an upgrade on the different things that you put on the back of the ears and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're finding out that a lot of animals die from that. So you have to be very careful when you use those products. You know, I would be, you know,
well,
you'll
poison,
only
I would
do
guess.
That for... Yeah, you know, and they die horribly, too. Lots of them. And so, you know, you need to read up on that before you apply anything. But there are lots of different things you can do to kill the fleas. There's one called, there's a little device called the Ultimate Flea Trap. It's a little light that shines on a sticky mat. You plug it in, the fleas get attracted to the sticky mat, and then you just replace the sticky mat.
Now, can you put, you talked about essential oils. Can you just dab some essential oil on, or rub a little bit on their hair? Will that help?
I would never use essential oils on the animals directly. No,
okay.
If you were to do something like that, your best bet is to put some on a cloth, and then you can rub them off over. But the best way is to add it to water, dilute it like citronella, very diluted, and mist them with it. But I wouldn't even do it on the animals. I would do it on their living environment.
Okay.
You see,
right.
For the animals, you know, there's diatomaceous earth, which works really, really good. Garden-grade diatomaceous earth. You just give them a light dusting with that.
Now, where do you get that? That's that DM product that you talked about in
DE, right. Diatomaceous earth, right. There's pool grade, and there's food grade, and then there's garden grade. Never use the pool grade. Well, you're going to have to order it. You're going to have to, you know, go online and type in diatomaceous earth or go to my website. There's those sources there. All DE are not the same. Some of them are very bad. Some of them are very good. Again, you know, find an online source that you can trust and then deal with that. There are lots of really good sources now that you can buy. I wouldn't go to the local store and expect that guy to know what's going on unless he's a good organic farmer. That's why joining a local organic garden club, you should connect with some people who can provide you with those things, see?
I think we should trust you, and everybody should come to your website. That's what I think.
Amen.
All right, you got 3 minutes. Anything else you want to, any other piece of good information you can share with us that we haven't talked about already?
I think you did a pretty good job of covering. Now, the answer is very important. You know, remember, don't, you know, you learn not to, you know, the law of cause and effect. So when the ants are doing something, it's not the ants' fault. You need to figure out what's going on. You're using too much water, your soil's out of balance. If your trees are stressed out, you're going to attract ants from miles and miles around. The law of cause and effect. The higher the stress, the greater the pest. It's not the pest's fault. They're coming around because of the stress, okay? So figure out how to release the stress, you know, what's going on, and you'll be better in the long run than to just go after the effects because, you know, you should just be using the same thing over and over again and not get any results.
Now, do you have an email that people can email you if you have a question?
It's better if they go to the website and there's actually any forum that they can leave a questionnaire to the general public. The majority of it's for members. You know, there's lots of stuff that members can get at. If they need to talk to me, they can check out when the show is live. My show is live, and they can get on my show, and I'll be happy to talk to them too.
Okay. So your site's invisiblegardener.com?
That's one site. That's the original site. The site that's brand new. It's organic. databank.info.
His book, Pest Control, Alternatives to Chemicals for the Home and Garden, I can't recommend it enough. It's a fabulous book. It should be called some kind of book for dummies because I can understand it.
Yeah, then the other company would get me, right?
Good job, Andy. I love it. It's a great book. And thank you for taking the time to come on my show. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good night.
Take care now, okay?
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health. Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.